Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
No one's demand but our own. And from our home office here in the Gulch in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, it is the latest edition of the 615 Sessions presented by A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports.com. Buck Rising here with you. Thrilled to be here with you on this Wednesday. One more day until the first round of the Nashville 2019 NFL Draft is finally upon us. The city streets are flooded with the NFL contingent. Fans have begun to trickle in en masse, and my commute has become just murderous because of it. But we're thrilled to have everybody here. If you're new to the program, we're very excited to have you clicking on our stuff, not just because it's good for us, but because we've got a fantastic show. We've done a fantastic show already for you with the first draft pod that we had, Teron Davenport, Joe Rexrode, as well as Ryan Hurd, who gave you musical perspective. Remember, our buddy Ryan will be playing the NFL Draft Experience stage at Nissan Stadium Saturday morning. He gets things started at 9 a.m. I will be there. We will be drinking tequila in all likelihood, except not really because I have a lot of work to do that day. But, I might stop by, might sneak a shot or two, and we just won't tell my bosses. Hopefully Austin and Zach aren't listening. Anyway, loaded show for you today. I'm trying to keep these pods under an hour, but the conversations have, honest to God, just been so good that we've gone a little overboard in terms of our two draft pods. But this one I'm particularly proud of because of how good the conversations were. Travis Haney of The Athletic, one of my best friends here in Nashville, somebody who has helped me a tremendous amount as I've gotten my career started here in Nashville sports media covering the Titans. Travis and I had a really, really great conversation in person. Actually, I had to take the pod equipment to his house because apparently that's the hardest interview to get in Nashville sports media is Travis Haney. You won't hear him like this anywhere else, and I know it makes him cringe when I talk about how exclusive an interview Travis Haney is. But he was generous with his time, gave us almost 40 minutes of draft conversation. He's been traveling all over the country gathering information on the free agents that the Titans signed and doing a little reporting on some of the players who may end up going to the Titans in the first round, and doing a little more background on that. So we had a very engaging conversation on that, which is how we'll start today's pod. Then we will go to one of my Twitter foes, not Joe Rexrode this time, Corey Curtis, News 2, WKRN, is where you can find my man. Corey has been burying me in all kinds of draft prospect conversation via text. So I said, hey, let's at least make this worth my time and bring you on the pod, and we'll debate and at length. Rashawn Evans, Titans linebacker, last year's first round pick, he stopped by for a good 15-minute interview that I think really you guys will really enjoy because of how big a personality Rashawn Evans is. Now, understated is a word that Travis Haney uses throughout our interview in terms of the kind of players that the Tennessee Titans like personality-wise. And Rashawn Evans, I don't know if I'd call him understated, but he's a fascinating guy. We had a lot of fun. I had to ask him a couple boring football questions off the top, but that's only because Austin and Zach would be very upset with me if I didn't. And then we played the looks like game and made fun of some of his teammates and his head coach. Finally, we wrap up with one of my favorite NFL draft analysts, Michael Kist. If you've been listening to Tackling Music City at all before we became the 615 Sessions and went over to A to Z Sports, you are familiar with the work of Michael Kist. If you listen to the Midday 180, he was actually their draft analyst contest winner a couple years ago, and it's how he got his start. So Michael is very familiar with our Nashville sports media scene. He has been gracious with me to share some of his insight, analysis, and prospect work and work that he has done to study these guys. He's familiar, more familiar with the Tennessee Titans than most, and he always brings it strong. But I must warn you that because we are no longer restricted by the FCC, that Kist took full advantage, and the language at the end of the pod may be a little graphic for young ears. So just keep that in mind, that after Rashawn Evans, there is a Michael Kist interview coming in hot, and it may not be safe for anyone who may be offended by a little stronger language. But the analysis and the breakdown and the conversation, as always, was exceptional. With that being said, we will get to our first interview. Travis Haney of The Athletic. We'll talk to Corey Curtis after, Rashawn Evans after that, and wrap things up with Michael Kist here on the 615 Sessions, presented by A to Z Sports. Back here on the 615 Sessions, presented by A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports, Nashville.com. Buck Rising here with you, very excited, because we give you an access-driven experience here on the podcast. This is a very exclusive interview. This is a tough get in the city of Nashville. It is my dear friend, Travis Haney of The Athletic, covering the Titans for that particular outlet. How does it feel to be the hardest get in Nashville sports radio?
Well, first of all, that's ridiculous. But second of all, I did make you come to my house to do this.
You did.
So,
listen, you're making me work harder than Rashawn Evans was an easier get than you. I mean, honest to God.
I did buy you lunch, so
you know.
I think you're still ahead for today.
It evens out. It evens out. So we were having lunch, and we were trying to decide, just talking, brainstorming, not even, but talking amongst ourselves as we would any other day, and stumbled upon the topic of what you've been doing, because you've just returned from a trip recently. You've had a couple great draft prep stories up on The Athletic, and more to come, I'm sure, as we get closer and closer, and once things get underway and they finally pick the bastards. But you have been doing excellent, or trying to do excellent journalism, in the efforts to find a future Titan that is sufficiently boring enough for this NFL franchise. And then you said, no, wait, we'll talk about it later because this is perfect. And so I desperately need you to expand upon this.
Well, it's all about fit, right? And I think we've embellished maybe a little bit. Yeah. The Titans don't want someone to come in. And let's go back to a couple of months ago when Antonio Brown was being discussed as a possibility via trade. That seemed utterly ridiculous because of how poor of a fit culturally and all this stuff that they've tried to do.
They don't like a loud left tackle. What do they want a loud wide receiver for?
Exactly. Through the draft, through free agency. They tolerate Taylor Lewan. That seems to be the lens that I think you would look through to some extent for draft prospects. And I mean, you're like me. We're all throwing darts at this stuff at this point. Yeah. And there's a lot of things that make sense. And I think they've narrowed down some of their team needs via, you know, through free agency. So I think we can get close to start narrowing it down, but at the same time, this may be a new way to look at it is, okay, if I close my eyes and I think about this guy, can I envision him in the locker room? And I think there's certain guys that it points toward, not just with the first pick, but all six picks.
But the requisite is to be boring? I mean, like, you're viewing this through the lens of, okay, how would they fit in the locker room? I'm now, after you've told me this, viewing this through the lens of who can bury me in as many cliches as Marcus Mariota can in a 12-minute press conference. And now I'm just thinking about whose press conferences I need to listen to find out if they're sufficiently boring enough for the Tennessee Titans franchise.
And I'm going to advocate, sort of, on behalf of the Titans here and say, the word we're going to choose, Buck, is understated.
Mm.
Understated. Great example.
Nuance.
The guy who's on this podcast today with me, Rashawn Evans.
Yes.
Has a personality. He's not boring, but he's still a fairly understated dude. He's not brash. He's not creating some sort of scene in the locker room.
He's not showing up in a custom-made Boss Hog suit to announce his $80 million contract.
No, I don't see him doing that in the future.
That'd be fun,
though. But at the same time, he does have a personality. It's just one that fits within the culture of what they do. He's a little bit understated to some extent. He did have some comments during the season last year that created headlines about what position he should be playing. I think that was actually on social media.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, this is someone who it totally adds up that Rashawn Evans would be the pick in last year's first round. And I think you start to look at the kind of the DNA, the character of some of the possibilities for this 19 group, and you look for how that fits into what they've tried to build over the last, what, 3-4 years since Robinson's been here?
4 years, yeah. And it seems crazy to think about that this is his team in entirety almost now. Guys like Arakpo and Derek Morgan have moved on. I mean, Brett Kern is the longest tenured Titan, and of course Rustin Webster drafted Mariota and Taylor Lewan and other players that still remain. But this is a team in John Robinson's making. And I was talking to Joe Rexroad, the Lego haired columnist for the Tennessee, and he hates when I do that. But it's true. It looks like somebody's just popped his hair on, and it doesn't move. It hasn't moved in the 4 years that I've known him. But we were talking about Christian Wilkins, and Christian Wilkins at number 19 overall. And he is, of course, the defensive tackle out of Clemson. He is a very disruptive interior defensive lineman. He is a high character, very intelligent. And I told Joe yesterday, I go, that's a John Robinson wet dream, that player, Christian Wilkins, for everything that they preach about culture.
And see, he's not boring.
No, he's not boring at all.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. So you're telling me I need to look for understated. Christian Wilkins, I don't think, is understated in the least. No, I think he would be a dream fit.
I would move him a little bit toward, the other end of that. Yeah. I don't think he's quite Ed Oliver or Chase Winovich or any of those guys. I think those guys maybe have bigger personalities, but I talked to Dabo Swinney a couple weeks ago about all those guys, and the story that he relayed to me was Wilkins basically tried to play a trick on him when he was recruiting him. Wilkins called Dabo and basically was telling him, really appreciate you guys, thanks for everything you did for me, kind of giving him the breakup speech. And then all of a sudden he says, so that's why I'm going to Clemson. And Dabo's just, rolls his eyes, and Wilkins is dying laughing about it. So I think he's just sort of a kind of a class clown guy. Sure. I think that is the vibe that I got. But any of those guys, Lawrence, Farrell, or Wilkins, not surprisingly that Dabo was effusive in praising them for what they'd done. And
I don't think I've ever seen Dabo say a negative comment about
I mean, if he had one, he just wouldn't say it.
Right.
But he said that these are three locker room changers, I think was the exact phrase that he used. And I don't think you have to worry about any character concerns or anything like that. And I thought of the few things that came out of Monday's pre-draft news conference, Buck.
Did you get a lot out of that?
Well, I thought one thing that did come out of it was the idea of, did Kevin Dodd, did that pick somehow sully how the Titans look at Clemson defensive front players? And I think that's a fair question. I don't think it should.
Well, people...
Robinson's answer was, each player is evaluated independently, individually, and that's totally right. But my question is, if they go back to the same people, the same equipment manager, the same assistant coach, the same whatever, janitor in the building, and say, what kind of guy is Christian Wilkins? And he's saying the same things that he said about Kevin Dodd 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you have to look at that a little bit differently? Is that, do you have to do more research because of that? So I think it might change a little bit in terms of how those recommendations or evaluations are made. But yeah, I mean, it's going to come down to film and what the individual attributes are of that player. And I don't think they're not going to cross off a Clemson defender because it didn't work out a couple years ago with Kevin Dodd.
I'm sure these people are in your Twitter mentions too. It's probably a loud minority, but there are people who legitimately don't want them anywhere near the Clemson defensive lineman because of what happened with Kevin Dodd. And by the way, we still don't know what happened with Kevin Dodd. Kevin Dodd just kind of vanished off the face of the earth.
Well, and the one thing that I've said about Dodd, and most people have noticed this, is that he blew up in that redshirt junior year. So he went from zero career sacks to 12 and a half in his redshirt junior year. He had 20 total tackles, Buck, in his first three seasons, and then had 62 his fourth year, his redshirt junior year.
Yeah, and the whole conversation around it was how much better he had become once he got extended playing time, when in reality this was just kind of a flash in the pan.
Yeah. So I think that maybe is the takeaway here, is not just a Clemson thing, but I think there's a defensive lineman at Ohio State, Jermont Jones, who has very similar type numbers. He had a really good junior year that elevated him I think in a similar way that would, if I'm the Titans, I'm looking at that and going, we should really take a pause and maybe people around him make you feel better about that. Maybe it's not a repeat of Dodd, but I would look at that a lot more than I would, oh, well, this guy went to Clemson too, said therefore all Clemson defenders are bad. Let's talk about the guys in the league from Clemson playing in defensive front or outside linebacker positions who are really, really good. Grady Jarrett just got a franchise tag from Atlanta, $15 million a year. He's damn good.
Yep.
Vic Beasley played on that same line, played with the Falcons as well. DJ Reader, Shaq Lawson, you go on and on. I mean, they've had success. The Kevin Dodd is an outlier for the Clemson defensive group. He's an outlier for Robinson's draft, 23 draft picks in three seasons. He hasn't had one that's been like that.
No. There are very few people who have one that's been like that. That's about as strange a situation as I've ever seen.
I mean, the DGB wasn't all that different. Different situation. But yeah. In terms of early picks just totally bombing, Robinson hasn't had anything like that. Clemson really hasn't had a whole lot of those either. I mean, most of their players, regardless of position, have gone on to be at least moderately successful in the NFL. He's just, I think he's just sort of the aberration.
And he is the aberration, but without question, I think. And especially when you watch these guys on film, the guys that are coming out now, there's four of them, the Clemson defensive linemen. I can't remember the name of the later round draft pick that people are projecting. Interior defensive lineman, as Kit sits here and growls at us, wanting us to play fetch. That's Travis's dog.
My dog would like to play fetch.
It's very aggressively. We can play fetch on the podcast, Theater of the Mind. But I look at the contract that Frank Clark, we're taping this on Tuesday. Frank Clark just got traded from the Seattle Seahawks to the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs then signed him to a five-year, $105.5 million contract, $63.5 million guaranteed. That's greater than DeMarcus Lawrence.
The Chiefs are on this team. They're trying to figure out, what have you been doing in this offseason?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
With Justin Houston, D. Ford, signing Matthew. I mean, it's just, are they better? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Seems like to go from what they had to Frank Clark and pay him that, it doesn't add up.
No.
It feels like a desperation move because you didn't really have anything else. And for Seattle, I mean, I think they got a first rounder and a second rounder, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's good for them. Nice move for Snyder.
But see, I look at what the Chiefs are doing, and I think people underrate how often NFL teams don't actually know what they're doing. And they're throwing money at a position of need because they know they have a desperate need, even though they just shipped some guy off to San Francisco in D. Ford, who was not the same kind of player. Frank Clark is much more durable. I think he's a much more violent at the point of attack player, but you can parse those things any way you like. I'm looking at this.
Iffy choice of words given Clark's history. But
bad job out of me.
The one, and to relate this more to the AFC South, the team that, and we haven't had a chance to talk about this, the team that I can't figure out what the hell they're doing is the Texans.
Sure.
And they sat on $50-something million dollars in cap room. They let the Titans come in and sign Roger Saffold when that's someone that they could certainly use.
They didn't do anything at all to address the offense.
Bring in a reject from Carolina. Carolina's paying Khalil $19 million not to play football. Houston signed them.
Yeah.
So
make your money.
They have to do something in the draft to try and fix the offensive line. That's not where you want to be. And for the Titans, they answered things already in a way that certainly Houston didn't. But I think if you're a Titans fan, you have to be pretty happy that you enter this draft in a different position than you were in back in February.
But see, and I go back to the Frank Clark thing, just because I think it is so important that you get one of these guys at value. I think the Frank Clark contract emphasizes the fact that you need to address the edge rusher or interior defensive line position because of what these guys are going to go for.
That's fair.
And I can't help but think that so few of them are going to be available at 19, and we have no idea the way that the draft order is going to
break. You think, though? I mean, I think the depth of that position suggests even the second and third round guys in a lot of the simulations that I ran, and I'm an idiot and did 100 mock simulations.
Yeah, but you're my idiot. I still love you.
I think it's fairly deep. I think you do have quality options in rounds 2 and 3 if you wind up going with a Bradbury in round 1, or you do go with Christian Wilkins and try and bolster the front beside Casey. I think there's edge options. I agree with you. It's it's the probably the biggest position for money outside of quarterback right now in the league. But I think this draft suggests that you could probably get someone who you could plug in and play in the second, third round. I mean, look at the guy who's in rotation right now, Sharif Finch.
Yeah.
Who, I mean, that's a great find. And
they
it looks
it,
like
they got him, undrafted free agent from Temple.
It looks like he's going to be somebody who's going to stick for a while and maybe develop into one of those rotational players. I mean, hell, he could develop into a starter with some of the
qualities. He's a more developed pass rusher than Kamalai Correa, and they had to give up draft capital to go get that guy.
Yeah, no doubt. But I totally agree with your point. I mean, you have to hit on some of these draft picks to save yourself money down the line. And you bring up Correa. I think Correa was John Robinson trying to make up for the Dodd miss.
Right,
and
it felt like a makeup.
It was worth a shot. I think they got some value out of him. He's still here. I mean, he has some value in rotation. He's a body that you don't feel terrible putting out there. So I think they're getting a lot more for a six-round pick at the time. I think that's the kind of move that makes sense. But at the same time, you're exactly right. I mean, you have to pay Cameron Wake what you do, and you hope you can get something out of him.
Cam Wake's 37 getting paid. He got a $21 million contract, and you can
damn my age.
Yeah.
I mean, and I can't even chase my dog around, and Cam Wake's going to be chasing NFL quarterbacks around.
A little physical better condition, Cam Wake, than you or I.
Slightly.
But this is entirely too much serious football talk.
Wow, what are we doing?
I know. This is a mistake by me. I went down an actual draft conversation road that I didn't want to go to, because what I want to do is I want to make fun of the draft. Because you like the draft. We were just talking about this at lunch.
I very much like the draft, yeah.
This is something that is you were saying, is all, if not comparable to the experience of watching an NFL game, but it's close for you in terms of that. I'm somebody who views the draft as totally ridiculous. This is something that is a combination of a livestock show and a beauty pageant for me. And I have
but that's
my
more own. The combine,
huh?
That's more the combine.
It's the combine is, or the draft is the combine with much, much more frills, as we're seeing on lower broad.
But it actually means something. I mean, these guys are going to be on NFL rosters. No, the combine doesn't. The draft does.
Yes, but I don't know. I have my biases about the draft, and things like, you know, like the Ryan Shazier, not to make this any kind of serious, but like Ryan Shazier being trotted out last year to make the pick for the Steelers.
That's a little much.
Everybody's celebrating the fact that Ryan Shazier could barely walk, and they're literally trotting him out there to make the pick whose body is going to replace his, who's been broken by the draft.
I'm not into the draft spectacle necessarily. Yeah. I'm not into the television program that is the draft or what that's evolved to become. I appreciate that it's here in town. We'll see if we haven't all just clawed our eyeballs out by the end of the week with what's going to happen in our city.
I'm just going to need more Gatorade and Advil.
Yeah. But the draft itself of these college players, you know, I covered college football for 15 years. That was my background. The transition.
Way to age yourself.
The bridge from the college game to the NFL and seeing where these guys are going to wind up, I enjoy that. I have always watched the draft religiously, like all 3 days, but not
that's sick.
Not in the entertainment sense. Yeah. Like I don't get into that. I think it's probably the same things. I mean, I know you are a vocal hater of fantasy football. It's sort of the same thing. It's like I enjoy the draft in fantasy football almost more than the actual games or the season itself, because it's just your chance to have a say in how the roster is constructed. And that's why we all do these mock drafts. And yeah, it's ridiculous. And I'm over the draft season, quote unquote, that lasts for 4 months or 5 months or however long it goes.
God.
I mean, that's exhausting. I'm a part of it. You know, I'm writing this content too.
Oh, sure. No, we are a part of the draft content machine without question.
But I enjoy theorizing who's going to wind up where and why. And none of us are going to be exactly right. Maybe we get a pick right here or there. But you do, even for someone when I didn't cover the Titans, I would have been totally into this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No,
so
because of your, like you said, your background covering college football, you are somebody who is interested, whose career has been telling stories. You have seen these stories develop.
But even for a general fan,
sure.
I think there's like this quality about roster construction or playing home GM via fantasy football or watching the draft that I think a lot of people are really into. I know you're not. But I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people love this stuff. And
yeah,
the ability to kind of create your own mock draft at home, through the
Draft Network,
the Draft Network mock simulation machine, or I think there's another couple of websites that have done it as well.
Oh, I'm certain.
That's cool. Like, as 8-year old me, that would be drawing, you know, they're,
oh hell, I'm doing them. And I hate mock drafts. Honest to God, no, I had Trevor Sikkema on the old podcast before we switched over to A to Z Sports, and I was like, Trev, man, I have literally done 10 of these things in the last 24 hours. This is disgusting. You guys have found draft fan heroin. You have literally tapped the vein.
And it does help you learn. Yeah, I mean, you understand the possibilities a lot better after, certainly after me running 100 of those simulations. I have a pretty good feel for who might go where, what makes sense for the Titans.
Yeah. Something that I do not have a good feel for, and it's something that I just talked to Rashawn Evans about, not really with the intention of making it a Marcus Mariota-centric conversation, but these things always end up.
I was really hoping this was going to be about Vrabel's mustache, but...
We could talk about Vrabel's mustache. It sounds like a much more interesting conversation. I'm still scared to tell him he looks like a retired porn star to his face, but I'll say it on a microphone.
Well, maybe he'll hear that at some point.
You think Mike Vrabel is a subscriber to the 615 sessions?
If he's not, he's missing out.
It's true. Rate, review, subscribe. No, Rashawn Evans is somebody who has great personality. Rashawn Evans is somebody who the Titans need to have a more concerted effort to get in front of fans, to let fans be able to connect with him on a human level, and to create a better attachment for a fan base that apathetic is not unfair. I think that I'm pretty hard on Titans fans in terms of the attendance at games, and I know that this has been a miserable franchise for quite some time, and the losing will wear on anybody, as it does any franchise.
Well, I think the people who are fans are passionate.
Yes.
But the number of those fans and growing that fan base and having stability within the fan base where they're not fair weather, they're not just pulling for a team that wins, they're there win or lose. I think that's kind of the gap.
Right.
It's almost like a niche audience in the way that most places would view kind of hockey, right? Yeah. That's for whatever reason, whether it's because it's a smaller market, a relatively new team. The people, I mean, we interact with these folks all the time. The fans who follow the Titans, the people who were in London with us,
sure,
they love the hell out of the Titans. They're all about it. And I respect those people. I appreciate them. I know you do. I just don't think there's as many of them as we would hope. And how do you grow that? I think that's what you're getting at.
You put personalities out front like Kevin Byard, like Jayon Brown, like Rashawn Evans, guys who have not had the opportunity, or who are just coming into their own, to where they can create those emotional attachments and create new fans as there are continuous amounts of transplants that flood our city. But Marcus Mariota is somebody who you and I were joking about before we started this, and this was actually the jumping off point for us starting the podcast, is laughing at the idea of Marcus Mariota not doing fan events, but being out in front of people, because it's, you know, does Marcus Mariota have the appeal that the Titans left tackle does in terms of fan events? And I can't see, I mean, I think, again, it's always couched by he's a great person and he's a wonderful guy and he's, you know, he's everything you want in a 25-year-old. Me as a comparison, I am literally the anti-Marcus Mariota, like to my core. And so I can tell just by that he's a great human being. That doesn't make him interesting. That doesn't make him engender himself, engender goodwill with the fan base that is already kind of skeptical of him based on how the health track record that we've talked about ad nauseum. But like, we're joking about, you know, if we're going to go to the new era, Marcus Mariota ball caps our autograph session that he's having at Nissan Stadium at some point this week. And I'm wondering how many people would actually be there. Cause I have no idea. I legitimately have no idea how people feel about the quarterback.
I hate that for him.
Yeah.
Because this is just who he is. I mean, it's not like his fault that he's a quiet, nice guy.
Like dumping on Corey Davis for being the fifth overall draft pick.
Yeah.
He didn't ask to get picked there.
Well, I mean, that there's a certain level of expectation, I think, with both of those things.
Sure.
If you're the number five pick, you're expected to perform at a certain level. Same thing. If you're an NFL quarterback, that means inherently you are going to be the face or one of the faces of the team. And that's part of the territory. Maybe that wasn't as much part of the territory at Oregon, where you're kind of isolated. You're in Eugene. You're not in a big city.
It sounds familiar.
It's a big program, but it doesn't really resonate in a way that an Alabama does, or even a Clemson or a Georgia.
You're describing the Tennessee Titans in Nashville, Tennessee.
So there's a little bit of a connection there, but then you run into this, okay, here's the NFL. They're having this massive event in this city. They're trying to incorporate the quarterback who lives here most of the year and plays here, and it doesn't always seem to work. I think you and I both would agree that Marcus is great for kids, great with kids.
Yes.
You know, he's seems to really kind of get into that and wants to help them develop. But
again, fundamentally decent human
but
being.
As far as the, you know, Joe fan or just people who follow the team, I don't know that I would be all that eager to go to an event with him there. Or I mean, I guess it's not like a speaking thing. You're not going to hear him give a speech or something.
Oh my God, you and I have done plenty of that.
But it is tricky with him. And I think this is part of the story, is how he's viewed in totality. And there's him as the player and the injury stuff. But there's also Vrabel and John Robinson. They field these questions from us and probably however many times a year, a dozen times a year.
At least.
There's a question about Marcus's personality and how does that fit in? And is he vocal enough?
And
is
Mike
he a leader
feeling the
enough?
Need to address it and saying, no, I'm here to counterbalance him personality.
Some of the most interesting answers I think I remember from last year was Vrabel about his personality set against Marcus's.
Why it meshes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I get it. I don't know. What do you do? Like, what's he supposed to do? Get a personality transplant? I mean, this is who he is. Like,
be less mellow.
You know what? If he plays in even 15 games next year and they win 10 or more, I don't think it matters. Not I don't think we're having this conversation, because people can live with a quiet dude who is a winner. He's a winner, I think, mostly when he's out there. I think he agrees. Everybody agrees. He needs to be out there more. I don't. You take the steps to try and make that happen, roll the dice and see if you can do it. But he's not going to change. He's not going to turn into like some mayoral candidate overnight here in Nashville. And any expectation of that, I think, is really flawed. So what do? If you're the Titans, you look to those other people. You look to, maybe you would never expect that a safety on the team would become one of the most vocal, outspoken, social kind of people.
Worked in Seattle.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson is not. I mean, Russell Wilson is about as lame a human being. The coolest thing Russell Wilson has ever done is tweet out from bed with Ciara. We're all incredibly jealous that he is now the highest paid quarterback in football. That's the most interesting thing that Russell Wilson has ever done in his life. The rest of it has been bland, generalized crap, other than which is the complete antithesis of who he is as a player. He's one of the most exciting players in the sport. Marcus Mariota, there are similar I mean, obviously, I'm not comparing the caliber of player that Russell is
sure.
to Marcus, but there are similarities to be drawn to where it doesn't have to be a quarterback personality-driven thing.
And I think they know that here.
Sure.
I think they get that.
Do fans?
If they don't, they should. But to your point, keep developing. Keep finding those next generations of guys. You've made me pull now for them picking Wilkins, because I think he could be one of those guys.
I'm waving the flag hard, 100%.
That's who you'd like to see him pick.
I would be in love with Christian Wilkins the minute he got here. The more I learn about him, the more I read about him, the more that you talk to people who have been involved with him. And just as you said, you were down at Clemson doing some reporting on various guys, because now there are several Clemson connections to be made with Adam Humphries in the fold, and they're being a connection with Dabo and white wide receivers, Clemson grinding to where you get and all that good stuff. But I just, Christian Wilkins, I can't get myself to move off of, even as Jerry Tillery is tantalizing in terms of length and physical
ability. That's who Rex Rode was all about?
Rex Rode and Teron. Okay. Teron Davenport, ESPN.com, who was
on
yesterday.
Well, you saw his Wonderlic was insane.
Yeah. Well, he can't be an idiot to go to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
There's been a couple. No comment. I just can't help but think that he makes so much sense. And the more that I convince myself of it, the more that I am fully aware that he will not be anywhere close to the Tennessee Titans, whether it's he's picked later or he's picked well before, because that's what happens when you attach yourself to, not attach yourself, but yet decide that this is the perfect thing. This is what they need to do. Of course, they're not going to do it when it comes down to it.
So I tease it a little bit, but in the 100 simulations I did on the Draft Network
so many.
Machine, which is really tedious to plug in the data for that, if you would guess.
Yes.
48 times out of the 100, it came up with Garrett Bradbury for the number 19 pick.
Sure.
So it obviously thinks that is where the Titans would go.
And it makes sense.
It does. It really does. I don't know that that would do a lot for your personality thing, from what I gather. I talked to Dave Doran, the coach at NC State. I don't know that
he but, you know, Ben Jones is a funny guy anywhere, but in front of a camera
that's
or
fair.
A microphone.
I'm more saying just compared to a Christian Wilkins. Well, I don't know that you're necessarily getting that there. But the thing with the draft, however you do the mocks, however you lay it out, is for the Titans, it really comes down to really two and a half things. Got to get the edge rusher, got to get interior line help, right? And then there's a gap, and then it's defensive line help beside Casey, receiver, maybe eventually develop a corner, maybe eventually look for another tight end to develop. That's sort of the way I look at it. And so then you turn the draft into a roadmap. Okay, mm-hmm. You do this one thing at 19. All right, check that off. Then you're looking to do this. I think the Titans, it's a more linear draft than I've seen for a lot of teams.
Sure.
Where you look at it and you go, well, they could kind of use this, but I'm not really sure. Well, the Titans, you're pretty sure within the first three rounds, they're going to address at least two of those things, right?
Offensive line, defensive line, edge rusher in no particular
order. I mean, the mocks that would have the Titans taking a corner in round two, you're like, what? No.
Todd McShay, I swear to God, I don't know how you make money doing what you do for a living, but bless you for picking
a corner.
Well, I hadn't
seen that. I didn't know that he had.
Well, I'm just taking a shot needlessly.
Oh, okay.
Todd McShay, not a future guest on 615 Sessions.
Who did he have him taking?
I think it was the Washington corner.
Okay.
Byron, is that right? I can't remember his name. I don't know. I scoffed and I moved on.
I hadn't even looked at it. But I think it gives you, if you're a fan and you're going into this week, I think you have a decent vision for what Robinson is probably thinking along the lines of those players. And I think the mock I came up with was, and I was just trying to go through it, like I said, who can I see in the locker room? And I came up with one name in the second round that I don't think a lot of people have talked about. And I said this should be a total of Vegas prop bet is if and how many Boston College players the Titans draft because of Vrabel's connection.
Not
to
just
that
players.
Program.
They're bringing in strength coaches. They're going to hire. I mean, they're going to hire they're literally going to bring the entire Boston College staff to Nashville.
Forget Patriot South. This is going to be BC South.
I mean, why not? Why not? Let's just bring in Dave Portnoy. We'll make it a whole Boston thing.
But the name Chris Lindstrom is really intriguing to me as an interior line solution. There's some people saying he might be even moving up toward the end of the first round. Who knows with that kind of stuff. But if he's there at 51, that's absolutely the kind of player that I could see as a fit, as someone who answers one of those top two or three things that they need to find early on.
And who would know more about him than Mike Vrabel?
And I think that's we're probably going to be having that conversation with him about one of those BC guys. I don't know who or where they're going to go. There's a safety, Will Harris, late, that could be there. There's a tight end, Tommy Sweeney, who could be there.
Zach Allen, I believe, is
Zach
a
Allen,
pass rusher for them.
Projected a lot in the sims that I did in the third round.
Yeah.
He's sort of a tweener, DN. They think...
Multiplicity, baby, drink.
Well, they think at BC that he was a more complete football prospect than Harold Landry was. Now, Landry had the raw materials, yeah. the speed, the, I mean, that's...
The bend that everybody talks
sure.
about.
Sure. I mean, just freak athleticism type stuff, but that Allen was just more of a complete dude. That people around the program have told me that last fall. Mm. And again, Tyler Vrabel, redshirt freshman offensive lineman, who's expected to be a really good player for them, I think, can give a really good scouting report on guys he's going against in practice, mm-hmm. or guys that he plays beside like Lindstrom. So I'm really curious to see if any of those BC guys pop up.
Yeah. I mean, I look at this and there are so many, in a draft that I think most would consider less than intriguing for a good many teams around the league. I mean, the Kyler Murray thing is obviously a novelty in any year. And the quarterback situation with Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock. I mean, you can plug name X of quarterback in and you can have that conversation year after year after year.
I've just focused so much on 19 though that I haven't really even paid a ton of attention.
Blocking out the noise.
Outside of Kyler and what Arizona does, I really haven't paid a ton of attention to.
But what you're saying is there is a defined path in the way that John Robinson approached free agency, in a way that he went through. You could literally have had a checklist in front of you,
yeah,
and said edge rusher, veteran presence, edge rusher, Cam Wake, check. Slot receiver, hard worker, grinder, somebody who you know better than probably any player, maybe better than any player on your roster to this point. Adam Humphries, check. You get interior offensive line help. You get rid of the dead weight that is Josh Klein and Quentin Spain. Upgrade the backup quarterback. Literally did it all.
If we made a list, and a lot of us did after the season, what do the Titans need to do? It's literally what they've done.
A lot of time in the offseason for lists.
Yeah,
but this draft for them, I think the more that I pay attention just on the periphery to what else is going on around the league, it's more defined for them, as you mentioned, than anybody else seems to. And I'm curious to what you think, and obviously this is going to change before they make the actual first round pick tomorrow on Thursday when all this goes down. I think I'm trying to figure out what the biggest storyline will be heading into Friday.
I know what I'm a little afraid that it will be. It will be the Clemson Kevin Dodd story. I'm a little afraid. I mean, but the reason I say that is the odds are fairly high that they would take certainly one of those two players. I don't think Lawrence is going to sneak up to where they are. They could trade back maybe to get somebody like him.
Sure.
But that could be the story. They're not trading out of the first round, first of all. I don't think Amy's going to have that.
No, not what the situation is.
I could see them moving down to the 20s, but they ain't trading out of the first round.
I don't think Amy is one who is overly involved in the goings on of the football team.
I think
team.
She said, I got one request.
But that might be it.
Just got one. We got to pick Thursday. I don't care where you pick.
Just needs to
1 to 32, probably lower toward 32 than one, but we need to pick Thursday.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's three of those guys out there suggests that there's a higher percentage chance that that's probably what we're going to be talking about is here comes another Clemson defensive front guy, maybe an edge rusher, maybe a defensive lineman. How is he different than Kevin Dodd? I hope that's not the case. I think the odds are just leaning that way to me. I think it's going to be Farrell. That's just sort of my gut. I don't have a great reason for that. I just think that it's who's going to be available and who makes the most sense for them. Maybe somebody like Montez Sweat is available that we don't think they're going to be. Maybe the heart thing is a factor for this team and other teams. I don't know. Mm. The Jeff Simmons thing is really interesting to me. Like, what could they move around in the draft
that
order?
That is such a Patriots pick at 32.
It feels that way. But
God,
now they're starting to talk a lot about Will Greer at 32 for the Patriots, which I don't really understand, but good for them. I'm really curious of the draft stories. I think I lean more toward the college prospect side than I do the other NFL teams, the other 31 teams. Jeff Simmons is really interesting to me. I talked to a couple of people at Mississippi State, including Joe Moorhead, about him, and he is a transcendent talent. First of all, they said, honestly, like man to man between us, no, we had no issues with this kid. We know what happened with him on the front end of his college career. This is a good kid. We don't know what happened exactly, but this is not a concern.
You have no, and nobody is justifying what was seen on video because it was horrific. But we have no idea what goes on in these guys' family lives and in their backgrounds before they make it, and they things like this get onto the internet.
Well, all you can do is back it up and be who you are after that. And from everything I gather, that has not been a factor in this draft process for any teams. It's all about
more.
It's all about his knee and when he's going to be healthy again.
Yeah.
But that's one for me. I don't know if the Titans factor into that, but where's he going to go? How does he fit in? Could the Titans somehow get him in the second round? I don't know.
Can you imagine?
But
Ja'Kai Polite, second round.
But for Friday, yeah, I think it just goes back to who they pick. And the odds are, because there's more of them there, that it's going to be a Clemson dude.
I just got 40 minutes out of the most exclusive interview in all of Nashville sports audio.
Totally ridiculous.
Since this isn't radio anymore. Travis Haney of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter @TravHaney, and you can read all of his work on The Athletic, as well as our friend Johnny Glennon and Adam Vingan. I guess no more Preds talk, though.
Plenty of Preds talk, just not Preds games.
I see a little not hot seat, warm seat talk for Laviolette. Johnny getting out there with the hot takes on Twitter. Not exactly Glennon's style. Regardless, Travis, I appreciate you doing this, brother. It's always fun, as you said, to get the band back together and do the pod in person, because it's way more fun this way.
We were a little too serious, I think. We're going to have to get weirder on the next one, but I appreciate you having me.
Back here on the 615 Sessions, presented by A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville.com. I'm starting to realize that the guests that we trot out, and we have had a great many guests during this draft week, these two pods that we have been pumping out, I think the only reason that people have agreed to come on and talk football with me is because they like to take shots at me on an open platform, and no better person to do that than Corey Curtis of News 2, my Twitter foe, my Twitter nemesis, and also one of the best hairdos in Nashville. My brother, what's up?
I am no Joe Rexroad, okay?
You guys are jerks, honestly.
Redeeming qualities, but Joe Rexroad is harder on you than any person in the world. He might as well be your dad at this point.
It does feel that way. Like, Rexroad will text me if I'm being too petty on social media about something. Like, he wants to make sure that I'm not putting myself in a bad position. Now, publicly, he'll rip my ass. But, you know, that's just what it is. Now, you're just a bully. You'll come at me with your dad memes, and you'll shame me in various ways. And all
my gift game is strong.
Your gift game is strong. Do you, before we get into the football, Corey Curtis, and you can follow Corey on Twitter, where he continues to bully me, at Corey Curtis 2. Do you just have like a GIF keyboard? Do you have these things favorited somewhere?
No, you just have to know how to search. That's all.
Well, you do that quite well. Something that you also do well is push me off a position and then steal my opinion on said position. As Corey Curtis has been bombarding me, or not bombarding me, but was texting me vociferously the other night, trying to decide what made the most sense in terms of a Titans draft pick, the top three choices that I would have if I had my druthers about who the Tennessee Titans would select at 19. I had Hollywood Brown, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma, as a part of my three. I believe my other two were Christian Wilkins and I can't remember which center.
Brian Burns,
the outside linebacker from Florida State. Those were the three selections that I made. And then Corey quickly pushed me off my position, then came to the press conference the next day and said that was the pick he made.
Well, you know, I give you credit for opening me up to that possible selection, because his size has terrified me. And so that's why I wasn't willing to go there. But then when I started to think about the impact of the picks and who they could get and who could make the biggest impact, who could be the biggest game changer for the Tennessee Titans, I said, I think Buck is on to something, because if they can't get an elite pass rusher, and look, I think Cleveland Farrell can be a Derek Morgan type, so he can be a good player, but not an elite player.
I heard somebody else draw that similarity the other day too, and it's not something I had considered, but it wouldn't be a terrible thing.
No, I mean, look, Derek Morgan was a good player for a long time, but if I can't get a game changer, because that's what I'm in the first round, that's what I'm always hoping for, is a game changer. Can Brian Burns be a game changer? Maybe, but he's not in the class of those guys that are there in the top 10, the Josh Allens and the Montez Sweat and all those guys. And I said, so if you can't get an elite pass rusher and you can't get to Andrew Luck that way, maybe you just have to keep up with him on the scoreboard. And I can't think of anybody who could change the Titans offense more than Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, I mean, and it's impact, instant impact that you're looking at or looking for in the first round. 19. If he can survive, 166 pounds is terrifying, and that was at the combine when he had all the time in the world to put on that weight. The comparisons that he's drawing, and of course he did not participate in all of the combine drills because he was dealing with a Liz Frank foot injury, which is very, very concerning. If you're
not great, Bob.
If you're a wide receiver who relies on the ability to be able to plant and cut effectively and efficiently, but the DeSean Jackson comparison, I think, is a real thing. And they don't once that dude gets loose in your secondary, there are very, very few players in the NFL at that level, even as he is not yet at that level. There are very few people who possess the kind of chase down speed that would be requisite to get Hollywood Brown and drag him down before he reaches your end zone. I can't, Corey, with a wide receiver, I can't, after all the countless examples that we've had of guys who are drafted high or drafted even in the first round, who take 2 or 3 years to get there, even if they do get there. And I look at Corey Davis, and Corey Davis is a far superior athlete and a more well-rounded wide receiver, I think, coming into the NFL when he did. And how long did it take him to get right and get comfortable? He's still not at that point. And I just don't think they have the time to waste on that.
And when you're looking at Corey Davis, his rookie year was largely lost to injury.
As a wash.
I mean, you have to acknowledge that, and then you have to say, you know, he took a major step forward last year. I mean, he won two games for them last year, the Patriots game and then the Eagles game. I mean, you could say he had impact. He was a game changer in those games. The one thing I will say about Hollywood Brown, and I'm not trying to talk anybody into the pick, but it's how I justify it to myself, is you don't have to develop speed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he gives you. The moment he steps on the field, he gives you speed. And that doesn't take any time to develop. And so, you know, can he be a game changer for them right off the bat? I don't know, but I do know that defenses have to pay attention to him because he is a 4-3 guy. And he's not just a 4-3 guy. He has football speed. When you watch the tape on him, he gets the ball in his hands and pulls away from people. And that's impressive.
No question. I look at it and I think, okay, well, then what do you do with Taywan Taylor? Isn't that what Taywan Taylor was supposed to be? And I know that Hollywood Brown, a much better, much bigger caliber.
Taywan Taylor is like a 4-6 guy. Okay. I mean, they're not even in the same ballpark. And I think at this point, the Titans have seen enough to know that Taywan Taylor and Tajay Sharpe could be a 4 and a 5 for them. They're not 2s and 3s. They have got to get better at their number 3. They've gotten better at their number 2 with Adam Humphries. They've got to get stronger with that third member of that group. Those two guys cannot be counted on week to week to deliver for the Tennessee Titans. If they want to be an offense that keeps up with the Colts and keeps up with the Texans, they've got to be stronger than Sharp or Taylor at that number 3 receiver.
And it's a totally fair point. They need more dynamic playmaking. They just need some kind. I mean, God, Corey, when Malarkey was still here and they were trotting Adoree Jackson out on offense, it's because they didn't have anybody else that possessed that kind of game-changing speed, and they desperately needed infusion on that side of the football. I sit here and I look at all of the needs they have. And of course, we have no idea how the draft board is going to break. And I don't think either of us are legitimately considering that Hollywood Brown would be the pick. Although, I mean, the more you hear about it, the more you hear that they like him.
I predicted it. I mean, it's my prediction for them at 19. I've staked my name to it. But listen, there are probably 10, 12 guys that they could take that wouldn't surprise me. You could give me Garrett Bradbury or Chris Lindstrom on the offensive line, Jonah Williams if he slides. I think they're all good picks, you know, for them. A lot of these defensive guys. I mean, look, if Christian Wilkins is there at 19, I would just drool all over myself with anticipation of getting that good of a football player. And that's a possibility, you know, depending on how things go. There's going to be a good player there. It just depends on which position it is and if the Titans value that at 19.
I totally agree with you. It's a fascinating position that they're in at 19, with because there appears to be so many linear needs that they have. Like, I think everybody can connect the dots, it would seem, but Hollywood Brown or DK Metcalf or even Noah Fant, if he ends up at 19, would shake things up, I think, in a way that people aren't expecting. And honestly, that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for a little excitement on Thursday night.
And I think the Titans would like to supply some excitement. I asked John Robinson at the presser the other day, do you feel like the entire league is watching you? And he joked about it and said no. But I think certainly all of Middle Tennessee is watching him. And, you know, people want him to deliver something. And not that an offensive lineman doesn't make you better, but I don't know how excited people would be with an offensive lineman. Garrett Bradbury would make them better. There is no question in my mind. And he might be the safest pick in the draft for them at 19.
But yeah, I mean,
do you want safe or transformational?
Sure. And you have to stake your name on either one of those things, because this is a pivotal point. As I mean, we have talked ad nauseum for anybody who has a platform to talk about the Tennessee Titans, how pivotal, if I can get the word out, a year it is with Marcus Mariota's contract situation and their window with being able to win with him on the cheap closing at such a high rate of speed. I've never built a football team. I would hate for them to pick a center in the first round just because of how boring it is. But John Robb, if I was a Titans fan, and I'm not, I'm somebody who is who roots for good people and good storylines. But I would trust that man if I was a fan of the team that he ran, because he has given fans precious little reason to doubt him, even as much as people like to cling to the Kevin Dodd thing.
Look, you're going to get some wrong. He acknowledged that the other day. Everybody gets some wrong. There's just no way around it. Now, those 3 second round picks that they got that year, it's not looking the greatest right now.
No. I still get Austin Johnson and Daquan Jones mixed up.
But the first pick of the third round that year was Kevin Byard.
Yes.
So there's that. So you get some right, you get some wrong. You got to get more right than you get wrong. And the other thing is, and this is where when you say why haven't the Titans been able to come out over the top in the last 5-10 years, other than injuries to their quarterbacks, they haven't nailed first round picks. And by nailed, they haven't had first round picks who have completely changed the organization. You know, Chris Johnson came in as a first-round pick, and that was a lightning bolt to this team. They don't have a lot of lightning bolts in their histories. They've got more Kenny Britts, more Derek Morgans, more Kendall Wrights. They've got a lot more of that. Corey Davis, Adoree Jackson. You know, they've been good, but you don't need good. You need Andrew Luck. You need Quentin Nelson. I mean, look at the draft the Colts had last year. It was a transformational draft. They got incredible. What was the kid from SC State who they got in round two?
Oh, the linebacker.
Darius Leonard. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean that may go down as the best draft in Colts history when you look at a play. You got Braden Smith as well. I mean, and so the Titans need – they need more home runs in round one specifically, because, you know, that's where those guys are, and you got to nail it. But when you've got Chance Warmack and Jake Locker both in the top 10, and you whiff on both of them, it sets your organization back.
Speaking of home runs, how good is Jeff Fisher on Twitter?
I saw the housing thing with his daughter, God. The flipping.
Yeah. He's like that and dunking on Jason Lockenfora publicly about him getting a job in the XFL. I mean, Jeff Fisher on Twitter has been a revelation for me this offseason.
Yeah, I piled on the Jason Lockenfora thing. I said maybe Jeff Fisher is not going to go into coaching. Maybe he's going to get with Bon Jovi to buy the Titans.
Well, shocking that you would pile on somebody on Twitter.
Well, listen, when I don't respect people, they get piled on.
Well, that says everything that you need to say about our relationship there, bud.
I don't pile on you. I'm first in line. I start the pile.
At Corey Curtis 2 is where you can follow my man on Twitter. Tell us a little bit about the live stream that you guys at WKRN have going during this draft week.
Yeah, you know what? It's every day from noon till about 1 o'clock, and we're going from Nissan Stadium. We're rolling tons of guests through. We got Desperate. You're going to be on the show.
That's right.
But, yeah, we had first day, great day. We had Kevin Byard, and we had Tyrell Dotson from Centennial High School, who's at Texas A&M. And we're you know, looking at about 4 teams every day, and we're breaking down a whole bunch of players and everything. It's just it's nirvana for you and me, Buck. It's just an hour talking about the draft.
No question about it. It's fantastic. I'm having more fun this week than I think I've had. Getting doing what we do. This is a bit. I mean, this is not something I think most of us have experienced, and I'm reveling in it.
It's made me realize my dream job is no longer in television. I just want to be an NFL GM. That's it.
Well, little do people know, you've been one in my inbox almost every day this week. Corey Curtis of WKRN, kind enough to join us here on the 615 Sessions. Appreciate you, brother.
Thanks, Buck.
Back here on the 615 Sessions, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports, Nashville.com. Buck Rising here with you. Thrilled to be joined by Titans linebacker Rashawn Evans at 616Evans4 is where you follow my man on Twitter. Rashawn, appreciate you taking some time.
Thank you for having me, man.
No question. So what's this first professional offseason been like for you? I'm sure that's a question you've got a million times at this point, but this being draft week and all the buzz around it that you went through last year, I imagine it's got a little different feel heading into year two.
Oh, it does, man. Now that I'm no longer the guy that has to wait for that phone call, I'm more of a guy that's getting more prepared, getting his body ready for the season. So, I can only imagine what these guys are going through right now. And just the fact that, you know, they're embarking on a different, you know, pathway into their career and, you know, being able to, you know, further it in this situation. I know they got a lot of things on their mind right now, because I can remember last year that, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, where I'm going to be at, you know, all of the things as far as that, you know, having a team that you might be, that might be your favorite team, but you're trying to keep an open mind because you don't know where you might go. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that come into play in this situation, man.
What was the most difficult part of that night for you? Because I imagine, I mean, at the end of it, when you finally get the call, you got obviously traded up for when the Titans made moves to come up and get you because they thought so much of you, rightfully so, as was evidenced by how your play got better the more reps you got on the field and the more comfortable you got in the defense. But that whole night, Rashawn, I have to imagine, is just filled with anxiety and angst and just uncertainty until you finally do get the phone call. So what was the hardest part of all that for you?
I would say just the understanding that, you know, you're no longer a collegiate player, that this is now your job, and that, you know, your production and all these things going to play on whether or not you stay in the league or you end up getting cut or, you know, leaving the league and going into a different situation. So, but just having those things on your mind, and then also too, just, you know, just trying to figure out where are you going to be. You know, you dreamed of this moment your whole life, and you know, you thought of so many different teams that you could have possibly been on, or maybe, like I just said, you know, had a team that you had in mind your whole life that you would have loved to play for. And you know, you have to constantly, you know, keep an open mind that, you know, that could possibly be totally opposite. So but at the same time, man, you know, you still have to be able to understand that regardless of where you go, how you're selected, when you're selected, that the number one thing is that when you get out on that field is that you let that be known, and that, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by the whole human element of it, Rashawn, because like I'm 2 years older than you, right? And I'm by no means an adult. Like I am a total immature. I can't even say the word because we're you know, FCC. Yeah. But and so I'm just imagining like how it is to process all of that in real time in the midst of, oh my God, I have no idea where my career is headed. I mean, you have an idea, obviously, because you're going to go in the first round. But I just, what, how is it? How difficult is it to compartmentalize all of that in that very instance and then realize, okay, this is the next step. This is what I have to do next. This is how I have to go about my business because I'm now officially a professional.
No doubt. You know, it can vary depending on the guy's mindset. And, you know, some guys are going to be able to, you know.
Wait, are you calling me weak-minded because I couldn't do that?
Yeah, no. I would say it like this. There are going to be some
guys. I'm kidding.
Oh, no doubt. I would say there are going to be some guys, like, you know, every guy is different, but there are going to be some guys that are going to be able to kind of soothe the situation or kind of just, you know, relax a little bit more than some other guys. At the same time, the number one thing they're all going to have comparison is the nervousness, because it's brand new. This is a brand new platform, brand new situation, brand new scheme they're going to go into, and a brand new area that they're going to live in for however long did they get their contract. So, but for them in that situation, I would say, man, it's very difficult. But if a lot of these guys, I'm knowing that they probably have an agent or mom, dad, grandma, whoever it is that's in the, you know, in the area right now that's trying to help that. But at the same time, man, I mean, it's very hard to just kind of fathom you know, the situation that you just were in, and you spent maybe 3 to 4 years, depending on what, you know, when you came out, of, you know, being in the area of seeing the same people, being up under the same regime, knowing the ins and outs of everything about the place that you were at in college, and then now you're basically brand new. So it's almost like high school when you go back into college, but just on steroids.
Speaking of college, you graduated from Bama a year ago with a degree in psychology.
No doubt.
What was the most interesting part of for you in order to, you know, what interested you most about that particular field? Because I imagine, strike me, Rashawn, every time I talk to you, as somebody who's incredibly mature for your age, especially, you know, in comparison with somebody like me. So I'm fascinated by the whole, you know, what most interests you about that field and how much it has helped you with all of this kind of stuff.
Well, I actually had a cheat code. My cheat code was actually my mom.
Sure.
My mom is a psychologist herself. She has multiple degrees in that field. And she brought me into that field when it was maybe like my first or second year in college. I was really unsure about where I wanted to be as far as, you know, the school set part. And, you know, she brought me into that because she was like, look, I've been teaching you this your whole life. I mean, it's something that should naturally, you know, happen when you get into the classroom. You should be able to understand it, because I was teaching you these mindset things and how to you know, break down a situation, how to, you know, process a bad situation and bring a solution to it. So my mom was the number one person that brought it in. You know, she even has a company right now called Critical Insights, which, you know, she allows people to, you know, she gets, you know, different things of data and all these other things and gather them up, and she helps people learn about themselves. And that's what she did with me at a young age. And when I had that process at a young age, it was easier for me to go through a lot of the things that I went through and be able to, you know, come out the way I did. I mean, shoot, if anybody that knew my story, they know that it took me all the way to my senior year in order for me to play.
Right.
I could have left at any time. I could have transferred at any time and went to any other school, and anything could have happened. You know what I'm saying? So, but my number one thing was that I was going to stay in it, and that regardless of what was, you know, dealt with me, that I was going to come out on top. So, you know, that type of, you know, mental process and mental toughness that I have, you know, from an early age that my mom taught me was that I would say the number one thing of the reason why I am who I am today.
Speaking of mental states, I'm greatly concerned about your former teammate, and I'm sure still your friend, Will Compton. He thinks it's a good idea to buy an abandoned school bus and start a podcast with Taylor Lewan. I'm greatly concerned, mostly because they're going to come for my job, and they're probably going to be better at it than I am. Have you seen what they've been doing? What do you make of all of this?
Man, I think, you know, it's two guys that have great. These guys are a really smart man, and they just using that to, you know, expand their careers, man. Sure. And I love it, man. I think it's something that's brand new, it's different. And then two, you know, guys that are on the team, we know these guys that, you know, they are literally what you see on that podcast is what you see on the field and, you know, in the locker room. So, but at the same time, man, you know, just being able to branch out and do different things other than football, man, I think every guy in the league should have something like that, regardless of what it is.
Oh my God, I could not agree with you more, Rashawn. I mean, my whole thing with football, and I won't keep you much longer because I know you're in the midst of recovery from the training session that I'm sure Vrabel has put you through.
No doubt.
But the personality in football is something that seems to be not discouraged, but it does not benefit somebody to stand out, it would seem. Like football. Mm-hmm. Football doesn't exactly create the most, I don't know, environment for you to be, I guess, comfortable or to allow yourself to have that personality, to show that personality. And I always make fun of it when we go to these press conferences, and God bless Marcus, he buries us in every cliche humanly possible. Yeah. And I know he's a good guy, and I know he's got a great personality. I just wish more athletes would show that.
And you know what, man? I think that the funny part about it, I'm glad you said that, because a lot of these guys, you know, we try to say all the right things, which is supposed to do. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, you got to kind of bring out your personality. These fans, they want to see certain things. Like, they want to know who you are. They want to know what you're about. And at the same time, sure, I'm like, you know, it's not like somebody's putting a gun to your head and telling you have to do this. You know what I'm saying?
It makes you so much more human.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And for me, I've
like I said, man, I've always been a guy that regardless of, you know, the situation or the stage, I'm going to be myself. That's where I'm more comfortable. And that way people can understand the type of person I am and where I'm coming from. And it, I think it's more interesting for fans to, you know, see that. They know that I'm a real person. I'm not just some robot running out there with some piss can. So at the same time, I just try to keep it as natural and as authentic as possible because, I mean, you get the best interviews like that.
Oh, for sure. Well, and I'm hugely appreciative for that. And it, you know, it makes me upset because vultures like myself will pounce on you guys when you say the wrong thing or attach other meaning to your words than you otherwise meant. And it drives me crazy because, you know, I'm just looking to talk to interesting people. And I wish that more guys were more comfortable in their skin like you are to be able to show that and create a more more human attachment for the fans. Rashawn Evans, Titans linebacker, here with us on the 615 session. We'll get you out of here with this. I've got a little Titans looks like game that the people on Twitter send us. So I'm going to run a few by you, and you tell me what you think of them.
Okay.
Does Will Compton look like an extra on the set of The OC? I'll take that.
I'll take it out. I'll go see you.
Does Marcus Mariota look like the friend in every group who is constantly apologizing for the actions of his idiot friends?
Yes. That is immediate. That's my guy. I love him, man. That's my guy.
Does new Titans wide receiver Adam Humphries look like the cool substitute teacher that lets you watch movies in class?
Yes.
I'm telling you, man, I wish I was original enough to come up with these things. These are things that people send me.
Man, that is. But you know what? They are undefeated. The internet is undefeated.
100%. And the last one, and hopefully we don't get you in trouble with this one. Does Mike Vrabel look like the guy who takes a first date to a beer league softball game?
Wow.
You just got so quiet.
But you know what? Me and Coach Ray will have a great relationship, and he will understand that I'm definitely going to say it. Yeah,
it's so spot on, Rashawn. I legitimately fell out of my chair when I was reading my mentions.
Hey, these are good, man. But I love when fans do that, man. It gets us more comfortable with fans and, you know, more personal with those guys. So, I mean, this is cool. I love it.
No question. Well, we loved having you. We appreciate your time, Rashawn. Enjoy. Do you have anything coming up that the people can interact with you during the draft weekend?
Maybe. I really don't know for sure right now. I know I'm going to do a couple of interviews that, you know, people can tune into. You know, I'm going to be doing a lot of events this week. So, you know, just stay tuned with those things. But other than that, you know, I might do some more social media things on my Instagram for you to go look at. But other than that, that'd be about it.
Follow him on Twitter at 616Evans4 and on his Instagram at r.blade_. Rashawn Evans, Titans linebacker, kind enough to be our guest here on the 615 Sessions. Appreciate you, boss. I'll see you once they let us vultures back in the locker room.
All right, no doubt, man. Take care.
Back here on the 615 Sessions, A to Z Sports, A to Z Sports Nashville.com. Make sure you're liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter, Instagram, wherever it is that you would like to harass us on the social media platform. Somebody who does like to do a good bit of harassing on social media, Michael Kist, Bleeding Green Nation, at Michael Kist NFL, one of our favorite, if not our favorite, I would argue at this point, draft analyst, NFL analyst, jack of all trades, and dashing good-looking human. Mike, I appreciate you stopping by.
Absolutely, man. It's my favorite time of year where I can stockpile all the screenshots I have of people telling me, no way, this player lasts till X or X player lasts until whenever, and I can really own them on draft day when they look stupid. So this is my favorite time of year for that reason alone. I'm that petty.
Well, I was just about to say, I soak in the pettiness that is Twitter. Like, I roll around in it like a pig in mud. But you, who just spend hours upon hours when I used to have you on Friday nights, just burying yourself in offensive and defensive line tape, how good does it feel when you can just get up right on somebody's profile and tweet them, listen, I knew this was going to go down. This is how it went down. Suck it, nerd.
Oh, it's absolutely satisfying. And now, having put a stop on all the film work, being able to bring my head up and check the surroundings and the landscape, I think Twitter needs me more than ever, Buck, and I'll be here
Twitter
for the entire ride.
God, that makes me so happy. You're absolutely right. We on Twitter need you down here in the Twitter sewers. It's where people like us were born, Mike. This is where exactly. We thrive.
Yeah, this is where we get along so well, and I'm ready for the debates and the freakouts and the overreactions that is the draft. It's take after take after just massive butterfly after massive butterfly. You know, we talk about it all the time on the Kiss and Select Show on BGN Radio. The draft is just one iteration of a million different possibilities, and I really do enjoy watching it unfold and watching the plebes freak out.
The plebes. Yeah, that's my bad for not working in a Kissed and Solak show plug. Check them out on BGN Radio and wherever you're, where rate, review, subscribe, wherever it is that you find your podcasts, et cetera. All right, let's talk about this Frank Clark trade from the Seahawks to the Kansas City Chiefs. They sent a first round pick, a 2020 second round pick, and an exchange of third round picks to the Seahawks in order for Kansas City to acquire Frank Clark and then pay him massive amounts of money. How much does this affect what's going to happen on Thursday night?
Oh, it's got a massive effect on it. Like I even said on Twitter, it's the sound of 1,000 mock drafts hitting the garbage bin is exactly what that trade was, because now the Seahawks have plenty of maneuverability when they had a lack of picks before. So they got two first-round picks, then you add in the second, you add in the next year pick and everything like that. They can move around. They can stockpile even more like they like to do. They'll probably move down in the first round and probably get some more third-round picks out of it and get a lot of swings at the bat, get a lot of cheap contracts to help them alleviate some of that concern with the cap and paying Russ. And I really thought that they won this trade. I don't know where the pass rush is going to come from. They're going to have to find some answers for that. But it seems like the Chiefs just really overpaid to get rid of Dee Ford and then swap it out and get a new guy and pay him more money than like Von Miller is a bit wild for me. But yeah, I think the Seahawks did themselves some favors in this situation, and it is going to have a big impact on the draft. So far to the point that I haven't done the full research on exactly how I think it's going to impact the draft, to the point where I'm just going to let it wash over me when it happens.
Oh, I mean, that's the way that you should experience this kind of thing, because
yeah.
I mean, at this point, we're all just kind of in it for the show. We're near enough now, the draft taking place here in Nashville, which, by the way, I desperately wish you were here to see this, Mike. It is unbelievable.
I know, man.
The way that this has just proliferated our little town here in Nashville, and it is certainly a sight to see, and we're happy to have it here. But I look at what Kansas City did with Frank Clark in terms of the money, the just God awful amount of money that they gave this man. Like, Frank Clark is not Von Miller, and he is being paid vastly more than Von Miller.
Yeah.
And I look at this and I think, oh my God, this makes it even more of a necessity for the Tennessee Titans to get an impact defensive player, either an edge rusher or an interior defensive lineman, because you do not want to find yourself in a position where you are the Kansas City Chiefs, where you seem to lack a little bit of direction almost in the way that they've kind of handled this Dee Ford Frank Clark situation, and you cannot hamstring yourself with that kind of contract when you can find these guys on a rookie deal in this year's draft.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, and I have a perfect fit for you, and a guy that's being mocked to the Tennessee Titans. I'm surprised he's sliding this far. My dream scenario, because I cover the Eagles, full disclosure, but my dream scenario is that Brian Burns from FSU falls into the teens, and Howie comes in riding on a f***ing dragon and then comes and swoops him in front of the Titans at 19, because that's exactly where I think he would go if the Eagles would stay put and he took a slip like that. You're talking about Brian Burns, who tested like an elite athlete, shows elite pass rushing skills. He's a top three player on my board, and he's getting pushed down because he's a little bit light in run defense. The guy weighed 14 pounds heavier than he played out at FSU. He weighed 249 pounds, and he still tested like an elite athlete. He's only 21. Happy birthday, by the way. We're recording this on Tuesday. It is his birthday today. He is 21 years old. There's plenty of room for this guy to grow. You get him in an off-season strength and conditioning program, whatever you want to do. Other people are paid money to do that. Bring him in the building. Give me the mold of clay. Give me the elite pass rusher. And then, Buck, what you're looking at is Harold Landry and Brian Burns on rookie contracts. That's your pass rush. That is insanely cheap and one of the best duos in the league, like hands down. That would be terrifying for me if I were an offensive coordinator.
So did you in fact get him a f-ing dragon for his birthday?
I'm working on it. I'm working on hatching those eggs. If there's some shady dealings going down with the witch lady, I gotta iron out.
Didn't even have to kill a horse. Just got the eggs, head straight into the fire. Happy birthday, Brian Burns. There, we just alienated so many people. Actually, I feel like a fair enough amount of people watch Game of Thrones that listen to this podcast. Regardless, Michael Kist of go ahead.
If they don't, they'll let you know on Twitter, because that's the cool thing to do now.
Yeah, like when did it become cool to shame people for enjoying Game of Thrones on Twitter? Like, that's a niche now, and I don't understand. Among many things that I don't understand, one of which is why people are so obsessed with the weight of Brian Burns. And this is something that I've talked about with Teron Davenport. I know you know Teron well, because Teron is absolutely an advocate, because like all of us, we've seen the tape of Brian Burns. And we know what kind of player he is. My only issue that comes up with the weight is just long-term durability, because it's a totally different level of physicality once they make it to the NFL. But I mean, that's a concern for any player. That's fairly minuscule when you consider the kind of talent that he is. Brian Burns, though, I cannot imagine a situation where he makes it that far in the first round. And we've talked about some of the other guys that may or may not be available for the Titans. Is there another edge presence? Like Cleland Farrell, who seems to be taking a little bit of a nosedive. Not a nosedive, as far a nosedive as one can take in the first round of the NFL draft. But he seems to be slowly, but day by day, making it further down the draft board as more people get hyped up about Brian Burns, and even Christian Wilkins, who seems to be climbing a lot of teams' draft boards. Cleland Farrell, is he somebody who you watch and you say, okay, he is actually the caliber of pass rusher people believe him to be? Or when you watch him on film, are you seeing a little bit, like I've noticed that he just takes advantage of the opportunities that are available to him because of the other guys that he was playing next to at Clemson. And I feel like if they, I don't doubt that he is an impact player and that he would be a benefit to them at 19. I don't think that Cleland Farrell at all would be a bad pick. But do you think he is capable athletically of playing outside linebacker in a 3-4? Because I don't know if I would like to try and jam him in that role.
Yeah, and it's interesting. There's a few moving parts in that whole thing. Number one, the distinction between 3-4, 4-3. You're playing nickel most of the time, so you have to take that into account. So it's not that big of a deal, but I would have him as a hand-in-the-dirt type guy. So I don't necessarily know if he's a fit. I think he's going to be a productive player. I think he's really polished in his hands. I think his footwork could use some more work. He's not the bendiest guy around the edge, but he knows how to set things up, so he's solid in that area. I mean, he's in the mid-20s for me. I think 19 is a bit high, but there's also the moving part that you have with Montez Sweat, who could also be available there for you at 19 because of the enlarged. Right. Yeah. So he's got the enlarged heart. Now, that knocked Maurice Hurst down from a probable first round pick last year from Michigan all the way down to the fifth round when the Oakland Raiders finally picked him up. But the difference between it is he was not allowed to participate in the combine drills. Montez Sweat was, from my understanding, from what I've read with Sweat, it's a matter of keeping a defibrillator around, which is already a practice that they have in the NFL with all of the teams. You just have to make sure that it's readily available for Sweat if need be. But like, if something bad were to happen, obviously that's terrible. You never wish that on anybody, and some teams are concerned about that and said that they quote unquote have him off their board. Now, we also heard that Leighton Vander Esch was quote unquote off a lot of boards too. He still went to the Dallas Cowboys at pick 19, so that's an interesting way to correlate those two. But if Sweat starts to fall, you may see Cleland Farrell start to rise up because of that position, and I see a lot of the top 22 being offensive line and defensive line. So I think there's going to be a run on both. I think Cleland Farrell is okay at 19. I don't love the fit. I think Montez Sweat, with his athletic profile, which is really, really special, I think that would be more of a fit. That would be more exciting to me, even though on my board I have Farrell above him, we always have to understand that when we're doing these boards, we're doing it kind of universally, and there are situations where you can advocate another guy before a guy that you have ranked, you know, lower.
I just can't. I can't imagine them getting so lucky as to have Harold Landry fall to them in the second round a year ago, be able to get Rashawn Evans through a trade up in the first round, and then lucking into Montez Sweat. Even because I look at this and I regard it as we should anything that we hear this time of year. This is information that's coming out Monday of the draft week for a reason.
Yeah.
People. This is the proliferation of these kind of stories for the purposes of tanking people's draft stock by teams to try and get them, you know, later in the round than they might otherwise be available. Trafficking in, and unfortunately for these young men who are going to be picked on Thursday or in any round, you know, trafficking on their imperfections and to do harm to them financially in a way that just kind of feels gross. But if you end up getting Montez Sweat at 19 because of it, I don't know if anybody's that upset.
I mean, it's the same thing that we saw with Dalvin Cook. You know, I heard whisperings that it was Leonard Fournette's agent maybe putting out some stuff about Dalvin Cook and, you know, his friends and his entourage and all this stuff. And Dalvin Cook ends up sliding and Leonard Fournette goes up really high. So one agent outworked the other one. And it's just kind of the shady business that is the NFL. And let's be real, the NFL draft is decadent and depraved. So that stuff definitely happened. So it'll be interesting to be able to finally suss out what was smoke, what was fire. I mean, I'm seeing people now back off Kyler Murray at number one to the Cardinals, and their confidence levels are going down. I don't know what to believe at this point, but yeah, to your point, Harold Landry falling to you guys in a second was absurd. I was doing a live feed for Bleeding Green Nation at the time. We were doing Facebook Live for that. And I was losing my mind because I thought every time somebody traded up, I'm like, oh, well, here comes Harold Landry because, you know, they got a needed edge and he's the guy. He was a first round talent for me. It was easy to see. Crazy, freakishly athletic on tape. So yeah, if you get both those guys and then have both guys that slid to you when they shouldn't have as your edge rushers on those cheap rookie contracts, that would be absolutely insane. And you mentioned Christian Wilkins. He's starting to get a lot of hype. People love his character. They think he's high floor. Like some of the best football character slash work ethic combination that you're going to get some interior pass rush. He could go before 19. He's been a popular pick for the Eagles at 25. I don't even think he's going to be there. So you might have to move up. But yeah, dude, if those pass rushers start to fall, it's going to be very interesting around 17, 18, 19 to see who moves up or tries to move up in front of you guys, because you guys will definitely be eyeing them.
What has been your favorite debate of this draft season thus far as we get closer?
None of them. None of them. They're all...
God, I love you, Mike. I swear to God, I do.
I think all the hullabaloo about DK Metcalf's three cone is stupid. You could see on film he was always going to have a little extra step in his comeback routes and the hard angle cuts, but people don't know how to differentiate between hard angle cuts and vertical cuts, so there's that. I mean, there's the 26 playbook at Ole Miss that nobody takes into account as to why he would only run a certain number of routes. DeMarcus Lodge on the other side wasn't running a fuller route tree than him. A.J. Brown really just added option routes and really had just struggles on the outside as well. So that part was weird. And then the same people that shout that love Hakeem Butler. Hakeem Butler looked at the three cone and said, no, this, I'm out of here. He didn't even run it. So he's not getting the same criticism. Maybe he was smarter for not running it because he knew he was going to be a little bit slower at it. But if you look at DK Metcalf, all these people are freaking out against these guys that struggle versus contact and they run in the 4.3s. He's 6'4 and running the 4.3s. If your wide receiver coach can't make that work and clean up some of the little technical aspects that allow him to open his hips and take some of those hard angle cuts a little bit better, your wide receiver coach should be fired. He should be gone. If you can't make that work, I don't know what you're doing. So that's been a stupid, frustrating debate, mostly from the dynasty nerds, but you know, they don't matter, so it's whatever.
Quote, Ben Solak is a savant. Michael Kist is great too, but I also think he might be a low-key alcoholic, end quote.
That is my favorite Reddit comment.
I swear to God, I just pulled up your Twitter to get you out of here, and I read that at the top. I'm like, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Yo, like woke is like searching your name on Reddit. Forget Twitter. Like I get a bunch of like Russian dart players and stuff like that when I search my name on Twitter. Search your name on Reddit and see what people are really saying about you, and you just come across gems like that. Like that guy's on to something. And it's not low key, brother. I'm drinking right now. It's totally fine though. I'm a functioning alcoholic. I hope my boss isn't listening. It's totally fine.
I can smell the booze through the microphone 1,000 miles away. He is Michael Kist. at Michael Kist NFL on Twitter, BGN Radio, Bleeding Green Nation, the Kist and Solak Show, the Scout Academy. You can find my man anywhere there is football conversation to be had, but don't you fucking dare come to him with your draft debates, because this is about to be wrapped up here in Nashville once we get the first round underway on Thursday. Mike, I appreciate you stopping by, man. I cannot tell you how much I enjoy our conversations. We'll continue to have them once this draft is finally concluded here in Nashville, and I always enjoy our time together.
My brother from another mother. It was good to let my metaphorical hair down on this show here. I appreciate it, man.
God knows it's metaphorical, because, brother, you ain't got nothing left.
Hey, don't worry about it, man. It's cool. The ladies dig it.
Man, I got to tell you guys, that's one of my favorite shows. Like, honestly, normally I don't like to just pack podcasts full of interviews. Like, you guys are coming, I would think you guys are coming to hear me talk about your favorite team, because the Tennessee Titans are somebody who I cover on an everyday basis. But now that we're branching out, the Titans will still be the main focus, but we will be going all over local sports. But this is an important week to hear from different perspectives on the narratives, on the analysis, on the people who have been through this process before, like Rashawn, and he was so great and tolerated our looks like game that I very much enjoy. So hopefully you guys got as much out of that as I did. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed our two draft week pods. We will be back on Sunday with a bonus pod, recapping the NFL draft after all the picks have been made, and we can sit down. We'll have heard from John Robinson and Mike Vrabel at that point. And myself and one of my good friends, Madison Blevins, over at 104.5 The Zone, we will sit down and we will recap the draft for the Titans in its entirety, and that will be coming to your feeds sometime between Sunday evening and Monday morning. So that's going to do it for us today here on the 615 Sessions. Many thanks to our guests, Travis Haney, Rashawn Evans, Michael Kist, and Corey Curtis. If you want to check out any of the other interviews that we have done, make sure that you are rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the pod. You can find all our previous interviews in the archives there. Thanks to Austin and Zach, who make this possible. Presented by A to Z Sports, AtoZSportsNashville.com. Make sure you're checking out their live Facebook and Periscope streaming show. Weekdays, 8 a.m. is when they start. Of course, my A to Z Sports primetime live show will begin in July. But make sure you are liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter and Instagram as well. That being said, I'm Buck Rising, reminding you to stay hot, Nashville. We'll talk to you Sunday right here on the 615 Session, presented by A to Z Sports.